This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
My NFL experience reminds me a lot of the utility industry where, you know, you really don't have a lot of say. They kind of tell you where to go. You try to fight for workers' rights. You try to fight for more of the pie. You try to fight for better working conditions. And you have to have leadership that steps in there.
Perhaps the hardest job in professional football is that of the punt returner, who tries to avoid being torn to shreds by very large, rapidly approaching human beings. Our guest today on Sea Change Radio is Tim Dwight, who was a punt returner and wide receiver in the NFL for 10 years. He now applies his David versus Goliath skills to the solar industry, where he competes against fossil fuel giants and advocates for better energy policies as a solar lobbyist and an executive for a solar EPC, or engineering, procurement, and construction company. We talk about his transition from one of the least sustainable careers you can think of in every sense of the word to one of the most sustainable. We also touch upon some of the systemic problems plaguing the NFL, including artificial turf and public stadium financing. And finally, Dwight gives us a behind-the-scenes glimpse into his time spent with the Chargers, Falcons, and Patriots. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Tim Dwight. He's the co-owner of Integrated Power Corporation. He's also a former NFL player. Tim, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
So first, Tim, why don't you tell us about your solar company, Integrated Power Corporation?
Well, we are a EPC firm that specifically works in the photovoltaic portion of the energy industry. We design, engineer, and help build solar photovoltaic energy generation systems that interconnect to the electrical grid through commercial customers, industrial customers, and sometimes homeowners. But we particularly set in the commercial sector of the industry, and we are helping businesses go solar and save money and redefine the energy paradigm.
And give us a snapshot of the size and breadth of Integrated Power, if you can.
Not very large company, maybe about 5 employees, but we work through the electrical trades as well as architects, engineers, and roofers, electrical contractors. So we have kind of a range of partnerships that we work through the marketplace. So we're not really a big company, but we work fairly smooth in the industry, and we work with a lot of partners and teammates to move this push the solar energy farther and faster.
When would a business interface with your company? At what stage, basically, in their idea of going to alternative energy like solar?
Pretty much on the onset. You know, we work all the way from the beginning to the end of a project. We project manage. So we reach out to businesses that are looking to go solar, whether they've contacted through electrical contractor or through the web, or have gotten my number, which is kind of more of what's generated here in Iowa, because, you know, I'm from Iowa and I've had a presence here for a long time. But we start from the beginning and we look at everything from their energy profiles to usage, and then we figure out and design the most cost-effective solution for them.
And you're based in Iowa, but the company is based out of Novato, California, near San Francisco. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah, we're about 25 miles north of San Francisco in a small little town, Novato. We have a small office there. But we kind of work through, through the trades. So some of us have satellite offices or work from home that they don't really need a whole lot of office space when you're working in the digital world now. It's a lot easier and more flexible. So I particularly understood this opportunity when I first was introduced to it back in 2008, and really saw solar starting to grow worldwide, and figured that, hey, this technology is going to eventually get to Iowa. It's going to be cost effective. So we need to find ways early on to adopt the technology and get not just business owners and homeowners, but also the electrical trades and utilities introduced to solar and more familiar with the technology. Because as we start to see the new technology, as it scales, it comes down in cost, and those costs can be not just across equipment, but also the labor that's involved.
And why don't you talk about that transition you made? 2008 was right after your playing career ended. Did you imagine in 2002 or 3 that this is what you'd be doing today?
I did not. Going through University of Iowa, I had a sports management degree, so I wasn't really focused on engineering, particularly any energy and electrical. But, you know, through my days of construction work and, you know, just kind of seeing like architecture, I've got really into that the last couple of years. It kind of gave me a sense that, you know, I'm kind of built like that. I'm built like kind of an engineer. I like to figure things out. I like to design things. And getting pulled into solar, it's kind of wrapped all that up. And it's been a tough transition, though. I mean, the energy paradigm is changing, but it's not changing as fast as, you know, say the computer industry did, or, you know, gaming for Nintendo. It's still a slow process. It's different in every utility territory. And just learning the whole electrical trades, you know, learning everything about electricity, how it's created, how it's transmitted, how it's distributed, and all the electrical components that goes with that.
And what are your biggest barriers to obtaining new clients as Integrated Power Corporation? Is it competitors in the solar space, or are you butting heads against the fossil fuel industry?
We really don't fight too much with the fossil fuels. We haven't got into powering a lot of electric cars just yet. We're probably around 10 years away from that. You do have some homeowners that have the opportunity to do that. And, you know, there's a lot of knowledge out there that needs to be transcended over to the customer, because a lot of people don't understand these opportunities yet. And it's new to people, just like computers were new to people back in the 80s and 90s. Now everybody has, you know, email. Now everybody understands what a PDF is and how to kind of process through all that. So, you know, there's a big gap in education, but, you know, there's definitely competition. Over the number of years that I've been involved in this, I started a trade association group called the Iowa Solar Energy Trade Association. And we have been up at the Capitol every session over the last 4 years, fighting for room in this space, fighting for tax credits, fighting for incentives to incentivize the technology to scale and to get more out in people's hands and out in more communities, because we're seeing huge benefits with it. So over the last couple of years, we've gotten state tax credits passed. And we've got about 40 companies now in Iowa that are solar companies. And before that, we probably had 3 or 4. So we've got a little market here that's been growing pretty good. But, you know, I operate in Iowa as well as Colorado and California. So I try to be nimble in certain markets because markets can change. You know, Xcel Energy is a utility out in Colorado. It used to be a great market, but they eliminated their incentive about 2 years ago. So their commercial sector of their market completely stopped. I mean, it was non-existent, and now it's starting to come back. So, it's been very challenging on not just, learning the technology and learning the opportunities, but it's also a new industry. So you have to educate quite a bit. And also you're getting fight and pushback from the utilities, because they've been a monopolized entity since the beginning. And, you know, now you're starting to see their customer go solar, which changes a lot of the structure of how the utility business has been formed over the last, you know, 100 years.
So when you were playing in the NFL, were you aware of some of the waste that was going on in some of the various stadia around the country? And did that kind of inform your move to the alternative energy space?
You know, I was a big recycler when I moved out to California in 2001, when I was traded from the Atlanta Falcons to the San Diego Chargers. Because they made recycling so easy in California. You had a big blue tub. You could put everything in it. You didn't have to separate everything from newspaper to glass to tin to all that could go in. So that kind of got me pulled into, you know, a little bit how much consumption that I was just myself was taking on. And then you multiply that over millions and millions of people and billions of people. And, you know, you get out of football and you start looking around for some fun things to do. And renewable energy was one of them. Solar is, was starting to become one of them. And it really changed my mindset on not just, you know, my new job, the industry I was getting into, but how I live my life and how I consumed, and, you know, my carbon footprint and what that meant, and what all the things that we have to, you know, strip away from how we've built our lives around carbon, understanding that it needs to change because, the world's changing, climate's changing, and we are a big portion of that. And the reason for that, I've traveled a lot around the world, and, I went to Beijing in 2008. It was my first August, not in a training camp or 2 days for football. And just seeing that pollution over there alone was a big indicator that, you know, we've got some serious challenges ahead of us on a global scale if we're going to have to reinvent our whole economy on low carbon. But it's exciting. And it's nothing but going to be good for people. It's going to be good for the environment, and it's going to create a lot of jobs and economic development.
Baseball is pastoral, 19th century. Football is technological, 20th century. Baseball is played on a diamond in a park, the baseball park. Football is played on a gridiron in a stadium, War Memorial Stadium. In baseball, you wear a cap. In football, you wear a helmet. Baseball has a seventh inning stretch. Football has a 2-minute warning. Baseball has no time limit. We don't know when it's going to end. We might have extra innings. Football is rigidly timed, and it will end even if we have to go to sudden death.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Tim Dwight. He is a former NFL player, and now he's a solar executive. His company is iPower Corp.
Do you stay in touch with a lot of your former colleagues from the NFL?
You know, a couple.
The reason I ask is I'm just curious how maybe former NFL players or current NFL players are starting to wake up to the reality of climate change and their carbon footprint. You don't necessarily see that if you watch something like Hard Knocks or something like that. You don't see a lot of solar panels on people's homes, let's just say.
Well, like I said, education is very important, and you folks got to buy in. Even normal people that I talk to every day, they're like, wow, that's a lot of stuff I got to change in my life. And you're like, yeah, you do. You know, you have to change a lot. And it's hard to accept some of this stuff because it's just been a status quo for a long, long time. But I think there's more people out there that are believing it. I don't know about the NFL. I haven't been playing for 8 or 9 years. But it is, you know, when you kind of look at industries that are the cream of the crop and making all their money, they're not really that environmentally conscious.
It's also kind of a dichotomy that you face now in your career, which is a pretty long-term view. As a football player, you suffered many injuries. You had 2 collapsed lungs. You were a normal football player. You were getting banged up. You had a pretty long career, though, relatively. I think the average career is, you know, under 5 years, and you played in the NFL for 10 years. But still, it's not a sustainable long-term career.
No, it is not.
How does this differ when you wake up in the morning knowing that you get to look 20, 30 years towards the future as opposed to every day you could be facing your last play?
You're definitely right about that. The longevity of being a solar integrator compared to a punt returner in the NFL is drastically different. But also depends on how good you are as a punt returner and how good you are as a solar integrator. I guess, you know, this industry in solar is rapidly changing. It's like I said, with policy, as I stated a couple of minutes ago about the investment tax credit being lowered down, and that's going to change the market. So you have to be definitely, I've learned, in both industries, you got to be nimble. You got to know what you're talking about. You always got to be hungry at what you're doing. And you always got to be looking for opportunity out there to make yourself better and to implement, you know, your trade to where you can. So, I have a bunch of different types of customers, which is always important because different things happen throughout the year or the next year where this customer, you know, might not be doing so well in their business where they, you know, need to, you know, hold on to their cash and not spend as much money, where the following customer that you had before might have a better year. Like, especially in Iowa, we have a lot of ag here in the state, and ag can be up and down. So certain farmers are making money and certain farmers aren't making money. So you have to be fairly nimble. But the NFL has definitely got me ready for, you know, one of the toughest battles I've ever been in. The solar industry, like you said, it's going to keep growing for the next 30, 40 years, and it's going to be part of the big answer against climate change. I'm a firm believer in that because majority of our climate change is happening because of how we power, you know, our lives today. And solar is going to change all that as people start to feel more comfortable with the technology and start to feel part of this this movement, which is very exciting. You'll start to see a lot more solar go up, and you know, and we're starting to see that now. So it's all, you know, and playing the NFL was fantastic. I mean, playing in front of 70,000 people, you're playing against the best athletes of that sport in the world, you know, and you got an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl and see all these great things and play with other great players. But at the same time, you know, you're not saving the world. And when you look at solar and you know where it's happening and you see it happen in all these other countries across the world and it's going to save the world, it gets you pretty fired up like you did on Sundays, you know, to play against, you know, your opposing team. And you know, I look at the utilities as those guys. I look at them as, you know, Deion Sanders, or, you know, I look at it as Junior Seau, some of these great defensive players I played against. And, you know, and that's who they are. I mean, big time utilities like MidAmerican and Alliant Energy and multi-billion dollar corporations. And here you are, a little solar guy out here. We're all trying to change, you know, change the paradigm. And it's it can be very challenging. But at the same time, it's very rewarding when you sit back and you energize a system and you know that those solar modules are going to be kicking out clean power for another 24, 28, 35 years. And it's going to help change a lot of things.
So, Tim, your post-NFL career path has obviously been unusual, but you say that the fight to succeed in the solar industry and to advocate on behalf of your solar trade association stokes your competitive fire. Do you see any chance of some of your fellow NFL alum following suit?
Yeah, it's definitely made me compete, you know, learning everything through sports and track and field and the NFL and, you know, their football, college. It's got me ready to compete on this level because it's one of the biggest levels to compete at. I mean, the utility industry is one of the last monopolies, but it also motivates me too because, you know, I look at this industry and it's so outdated. It's so archaic. It's so pollutive. It's so inefficient. And what we're doing to the grid and how we're modernizing everything, it's exciting because you are taking this old industry and you're revolutionizing it into what's new. And once people kind of get an understanding of that and they really invest into the conversation and really understand the metrics and get to know this stuff, then the light bulb will go off for them.
So turning to the NFL for a second, the modern state of the NFL, you've been out for 8 years. What are two things about today's NFL that make you glad you're a solar executive and not an ESPN analyst?
You know, I played in the NFL. I went through all that. That was my life for 10 great years. And I truly respect that sport. Football's a great sport. There's some things right now that I kind of disagree with where it's kind of headed, where it's had headed for the last 10 years. You got to look at safety. And that's one of the most important things about a sport is safety. And it's just, football is one of the roughest sports. I mean, you look at MMA and those guys get bloodied up and busted down, and that's a rough sport. But, you know, you look at football where you've got 260-pound men, 300-pound men, and you're running down the field, you know, faster than a lot of people can run, and you're smashing into each other. So there's certain things that you have to evolve with. We've seen the rise in concussions. We've seen incidents where guys are flying down there have broken necks. So as an industry, you have to evolve. You have to look at certain things that are problems in your industry, and you got to fix them. As you're seeing, you know, more nowadays, you're starting to see the passing game becoming pretty much all of the game. I think it's good. But I'd like to see us go back to natural grass. I think the natural playing surface is the way to go. You're starting to not just see NFL teams, more of them now have artificial grass, as well as even outdoor teams have it, and colleges, high schools, and even junior highs. And I think it's a surface that needs to go away. We need to get back to more natural playing fields, as well as starting to understand maybe more of, you know, the helmet, redesigning the helmet better to make it softer, to make it safer for people. Because like we see, you know, as we see every next generation that comes through, these people are bigger, they're faster, and they're stronger. And that develops a lot faster than your brain thickness on taking all these hits. So it's an important thing that we need to start looking at some of these things.
They call me sweetness, and I like to dance. Running the ball is like Mickey Mouse Mance. We had the goal since training camp to give Chicago a Super Bowl champ.
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Tim Dwight. He is a former NFL player, and now he's a solar executive. His company is iPower Corp. You mentioned how the turf has to go, and one of the things that I didn't hear proposed as a possible theory this offseason, there were like 26 or 27 ACL tears in training camps alone this year. I can't help but think that the surface and the cleats that people are wearing on that surface don't mesh, especially when you're putting these extremely well-conditioned athletes on there where their muscles may be stronger than their joints can hold.
And that's the rub. I mean, if you sit back and you really look at a company and you start to look at your costs and your risks, you know, and we've seen to see concussions really go through the roof over the last 10 years. And if you look back when the sports turf came on the field, it was back in the early 2000s, because I remember when it first came in, I had to run around on it because that turf really grabs on your joints and your ankles and your knees, and it really puts stress on your tendons. And plus, you're operating a lot higher temperature.
Oh, that's a good point. And you probably felt the after effects as well after a practice.
Absolutely. I mean, you come off the practice field and a couple hours later, you would be, extremely worn out.
Yeah, I remember when Wes Welker tore his ACL down in Houston. It was the last game of the season, and a lot of the players were like, yep, we hate that surface. You don't hear about it until it's too late. There was like a tear in the carpet.
Well, Houston's a little different. So you've got two types of natural grasses that you can put into stadiums. One, like Houston, where you put it in pieces, comes in like sheets. So you basically put the whole field together like a jigsaw puzzle, okay? But it's all on a jigsaw. It's all in pieces and squares. And then the other turf is like in Arizona, where you actually pull the whole field outside and move it out of the way, and then you bring in a whole new field. You know, and if this is a multi-billion dollar industry, and you've got $150 million on each sideline every Sunday, and the risks, if you could bring them down up to 5, even 10, 15%, which you would just on maybe, you know, injuries to joints, and then you've got concussion issues, you bring that down, you know, you've got a pretty good argument that, natural grass is the way to go. Because I think if you talk to a lot of players, they would tell you the same thing, that they would rather play on natural grass most of the time than they would on artificial turf. You know, people talk about, well, it's less cost. Well, if you just looked at the NFL, for instance, you know, Dez Bryant, guy just signed a massive contract deal, and now he's got a broken foot. So he makes, let's just say he makes, you know, $10 million a year. He's probably making more than that. He's probably making $13 million. So $13 million divided by 16 games. So he's making $812,500 per game. So he's out, let's just say, 6 weeks. Let's take that times six. That's almost $5 million of non-production from an employee that these guys spent money on.
There's your turf right there, right?
Well, yeah. It takes your maybe $1.5 to $2 million per year to upkeep your turf. And you're willing to have one player out for 6 weeks at $5 million. Now, that's just one guy. And I'm not saying that turf did it all, but you know, when you have these low extremity injuries, it has a lot to do with the type of service you're playing on.
And to add to your policy discussion, when you think about public stadium financing and the value of what these teams are worth, when you started in the league in 98, the average NFL franchise was about $205, $210 million. In 2007, when I think you retired, it was $900 million. Today, the average is $2 billion. That's a tenfold increase in, 15 years? And we're still giving away. A lot of communities are issuing bonds to try to keep their teams in their city and giving their very wealthy owners everything they can give them to satisfy them so they don't leave. It really is about good policy, really.
You know, you're looking at what's going on with San Diego right now. I mean, obviously, they've been leveraging out, saying they're going to go to L.A. if they don't get what they want down at their stadium. And it's a shame to see some of that stuff, because that organization's been in that for a long, long time. You know, everybody needs to pay their fair share when it comes to a new stadium. You know, cities can't rely on a team to be great every year like the Patriots to drive revenues all the time. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people driving up to L.A. for San Diego Charger games all the way across Camp Pendleton. I mean, I know I wouldn't. But you got to also, you know, look at how to keep communities healthy. Good relationships between owners and community leaders is super important. It's no fun. It doesn't work when someone else is, you know, taking the whole pie. which as a, you know, an ex-NFL player, we definitely know what that feels like. You know, we tried to fight for everything we can. It's amazing to see, you know, just over, you know, the last 15 years and when I was playing 10 years and the guys in the 80s on how much we've had to fight for in this industry. I mean, it reminds me a lot. My NFL experience reminds me a lot of the utility industry where, you know, you really don't have a lot of say. They kind of tell you where to go. You try to fight for workers' rights. You try to fight for more of the pie. You try to fight for better working conditions. And you have to have leadership that steps in there and can really do that. And part of it's the players. Part of it's the NFLPA. Part of it's some of us older players on getting vocal. There's a lot that goes in the NFL. There's a lot of people who's got their hands in it. So it can be challenging at times. But like I said, I had a great experience. And I love the game of football. It's a great sport.
Well, I know this is an environmentally focused radio show, of course, but I'm contractually obligated, Tim, by my friends and family to ask you about the New England Patriots, an organization for whom you played in 2005 and one which has been under quite a bit of scrutiny this year. What are your thoughts about these allegations of impropriety?
All I can tell you when I was there is that, you know, I didn't really have any, you know, knowledge of anything of this going on. You know, as a player, as an ex-player, and some of the guys you played with, you know, especially with Tom being there, it's unfortunate to kind of hear about these things because you develop relationships. And, you know, when you see things like this happen, it kind of, you know, wears on you a little bit because you're just like, man, you know, and then it's just one thing, you know, now it's another, now the Spygate thing's back up again.
For people who just think the Patriots are this terrible organization that has cheated their way to every success, I can't help but think that a lot of these players that are so viciously cut by the handful every season wouldn't have an axe to grind against the Patriots. And yet you don't see one player during the whole Bill Belichick reign come back and say, oh, yeah, yeah, he was totally digging through trash cans to try to find players' playbooks and he was telling us to do all these really nefarious things. It would seem like somebody would have an axe to grind and would at least speak on the record about that. And yet that hasn't happened.
Well, you know, I think, you know, during those years, those guys were great football teams. I mean, if you look at the players they had, Rabel, Bruschi, Ted Johnson, Brady, Deion Branch. But, you know, when I was there, it was different. It was a whole nother level of how we prepared, of how we went about our business, of how the whole thing was set up. I mean, when I got there, I was like, this is why these guys win. They don't have to worry about types of food they're eating because they get the best food. I mean, these are some of the things that are challenging when I went through with the Atlanta Falcons and the San Diego Chargers. I mean, you go to work and you're a $1 billion company, you're having breakfast, right? So we had to change all this stuff on some of these organizations that I went to. When you got to the Patriots, it was already there. I mean, we're in off-season workouts. We had three chefs sitting behind the counter cooking you anything you wanted pretty much. So everything was taken care of. I mean, Bill does such a great job of eliminating all these distractions that you don't need to be dealing with to be good at your job. They try to eliminate a lot of distractions. I mean, man, this I was like, this is so easy, guys. This is great. And that's one of the reasons why they're so successful is because they eliminate a lot of these issues. If you ever look at their interviews, you know, they don't really give up a whole lot because, you know, why should they? You know, why should they tell the opposing team and all the fans what they're doing or when they're going to be back from, you know, surgery or injury? Because they don't really know some of that stuff. You know, it's all like, hey, if you'll see me, I'll be here. And then we can have this interview again. But yeah, but very professional on that organization. And like I was saying, it's you develop relationships and it's hard when you're out of the league and you see some of these things come up and, you know, it gets you, you know, things, you know, just a little different. You know, you're just like, man, it's tough. Those guys are going through that stuff.
He's a former NFL player and his company is iPower Corp. He's a solar power executive, Tim Dwight. Tim, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.